From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette, and this is Idaho Matters. With the official end of the coronavirus public health emergency coming on May 11th, it does mean that we will see a complex set of policy changes, but also a new move forward here in the United States. So what does that all mean? Well, Dr. David Pate is joining us today to talk more about that. He is, of course, the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. And if you have questions about public health, you can email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. As always, Dr. Pate, really good to have you with us.
Thank you, Gemma.
So, Dr. Pate, let's talk about things that could change the COVID-19 pandemic going forward. And there are some positive things. And I know a lot of times, you bring up the pandemic, you bring up COVID, people are like, oh, there really is some good news. So can you talk about kind of what you see that looking like in the future?
Yeah, I think that we don't know what the future is going to hold relative to COVID. There, as you said, there are some things that could be very big positives. There's also some things that worry me, and I don't know what's going to happen. But on the good news side is that there is the potential. There's a lot of research going into how can we even make these vaccines better? I just want to remind everybody that, if you go back to, the fall of 2020, when we were hearing about the results of these vaccines, this was way better than I even dreamed of hoping for. So we did something phenomenal. The problem is, because we relied just on a vaccine strategy, we didn't do anything to really meaningfully curtail the transmission of this virus. So it's gotten increasingly immune evasive. It's gotten more transmissible. But, I do hold out hope that, and we talked before on this show about the possibility of a vaccine that could actually give us what we call mucosal immunity. In other words, not just protecting us from severe disease as these current vaccines do, but vaccines that would actually help prevent us from even getting infected. The good news is if we don't get infected, we're not going to get long COVID. If we don't get infected, we're not going to transmit it to somebody who is at high risk. Another possibility is research into new treatments and antivirals and other treatments. Imagine if we could get to a antiviral or some kind of pill that we could take right on an exposure or right at the beginning of symptoms that could make it so that we don't get sick or don't get long COVID. So certainly we can hope and hold out hope for that. A simple approach that unfortunately I just beat my head against the wall because I don't know why we can't do this is that there are some strategies that we could just take in public buildings that would improve the air handling and air filtration and could even treat the air that we could not only decrease the transmission of COVID, but all these other viruses that we've talked about, influenza, RSV, et cetera. And so those are all on the positive side. On the negative side, what I spend my time worrying about is now that we have so many immunocompromised people that have gotten infected because we didn't do much to protect them. And frankly, the medicine that could protect them now no longer works because we've allowed the virus to evolve so much. But I worry about somebody that's immunocompromised, did not get rid of the virus, is still chronically infected with, say, Delta, and is getting infected with one of these new variants. And we could, that's the scenario, we could have a recombinant where we get something really quite different that has, could have the terrible features of Delta and the terrible features of Omicron mixed. The other way that could happen is because the other thing we have not taken care to prevent is COVID getting into the animal population. And while there are a number of animals that we've transmitted that are not likely to transmit back to us, we know that mink can mutate that virus and then transmit it back to us. And we know that white-tailed deer can do that. And so, and we don't know which others might be able to. And so that's another way that we could reintroduce a highly changed form of the virus that, you know, could be potentially worse for us. We just don't know. So there's some positives, there's some negatives. I don't know how this is going to play out. I'm hoping for the best, but frankly, I think we should take more steps as a country, but I think that ship has sailed.
So Dr. Pate, when will we know, you know, more about COVID? And what I mean by that is when we look at the flu, you go back to the 1918 Spanish flu, right? And it is the enemy that we know at this point. You get your flu shot. I mean, every year they, you know, they can try to figure out what strains there are going to be. And we know a lot about the flu now, but the Spanish flu was 100 years ago. How many more years, I guess, do researchers and scientists need to fully understand COVID? Or will we get to that point?
I think we'll get to that point, but it does take a long time. You'll remember, I think it was just last year that we finally were able to conclusively prove the link between Epstein-Barr virus and multiple sclerosis. I mean, you know, all of us were exposed to Epstein-Barr virus when we were kids. So it's taken decades. You know, look at how long with HIV that it took us to really have a good understanding of that. Again, decades. The problem is that some of these post-viral syndromes and some of the things about if there are diseases that prior infection will predispose us to, or, you know, there's about 8 viruses that predispose to cancers. You don't really make those links for decades. Okay. So, you know, for me, it's not going to be particularly meaningful. What I worry about is young kids that we have allowed to be infected with wild abandon and multiply so. And so I don't know that there's going to be any long-term effects, but on the other hand, I don't know that there's not, but we're not going to know that answer, you know, for probably at least a good 10 to 15 years. Wouldn't be surprised if it's 20 or something on that. But at the same time, our rate of learning is increasing so tremendously. Frankly, the amount that we already know about this virus compared to previously completely new viruses is mind-altering. And that's because we have mobilized scientists across the world. And many scientists stopped what they were working on and shifted to research COVID and all. So we've had an explosion of knowledge about this virus that has far exceeded any previous one. So hopefully we'll know sooner, but it's still going to be, you know, at least a decade or more.
And would you put that time frame in place even for knowing more about long COVID, in particular people that get long COVID? Because it's still, I mean, I realize if you have, you know, some pre-existing conditions, maybe you're more prone to COVID, to getting long COVID, but it still kind of feels like a crapshoot in a way.
It does. And there's much that we don't understand about it. I think it's a factor of what are we willing to commit to the research of this? And SARS-CoV-2 is not the only virus that causes a post-viral syndrome in some folks. So this research can apply to many other things besides just COVID. But, you know, it's going to be a matter of what's our aptitude for funding science, for funding research in this area. I do think there's going to be a big motivation to do so because, frankly, we are now just starting to see what the implications of long COVID is on the workforce and people that are at the prime of their age. And so I think we're going to have to deal with this subject. My hope is that we'll fund that research. We have the know-how. If If we can get the funding, conduct large-scale trials, multi-center trials, I have no doubt that we can figure this out. But yes, it will. If we focus on it, yes, I think within a handful of years, we could have a good understanding of that disease.
Because I think about people who, you know, you in particular, as you mentioned, you know, children and teenagers, and, you know, at least if you knew, or, you know, who may have adverse effects to it, I mean, that kind of maybe hopefully changes your way of thinking just as an individual.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there's some exciting things out there, Gemma. First of all, if we could develop a way to really realize who's at risk so that mm-hmm. we could tell you, look, Gemma, your son has these factors. He will be at risk. Then, you know, you can alter your risk paradigm, and maybe there's something we can do to increase his protection. The other thing that's very exciting is that there's a lot of research going on to be able to identify who's going to respond better to vaccines and how we might modify the vaccines so that people do respond better. And so I think that it's going to be a very exciting decade, because there is, at least in the science community, even if the rest of people are not worried about COVID, there's a lot of interest in the medical and science community. And with the funding, I think we are positioned that we could have an explosion of our knowledge. And it's so important, Gemma, because this will not be our last pandemic.
Okay, that was my next question. And I want to stick my head in the sand on this one, to be perfectly honest. Because honestly, Dr. Pate, when I look back to even January, February of 2020, even with the news coming in about this, you know, novel coronavirus, I could not wrap my head around the fact that we would go into a global pandemic. It seemed just unimaginable. I mean, it truly did. And I remember even in the midst of it, in the beginning of it, being like, how in the world are we in a pandemic? And yet, I mean, what do you believe the likelihood is that we will see another pandemic in our lifetimes?
Unfortunately, I think it's quite high. And I'll tell you why. You know, first of all, you know, I did at one time count, and I've forgotten, but I think there's already been 4 or 5 pandemics in my lifetime that mm-hmm. by a conservative count. In other words, only counting those things that the World Health Organization has actually agreed these are pandemics. There are other things that people would argue were pandemics. I'm not counting them. Like, I'm not counting the first SARS. I'm not counting MERS, you know, some of those things. But even conservatively, there's been 4 or 5 pandemics already in my lifetime. The last one was actually 10 years before we had the COVID. And so, you know, the odds are that we are going to have another pandemic in any listener's lifetime that's going to be living more than another decade. Now, are those chances increasing? I would say yes. And I think most people that study pandemics would say yes. Why? Number one is our world is much more connected, much more global now, in that you see the travel, the ability for people to go to one part of the world and bring back a virus to another. And it's not just people. You may recall that in, I think it was 2003, we imported animals from Africa to the United States. And that was one of the first times we had a outbreak of Ebola in the United States. It was through animals that we brought in. Now with avian flu, so avian flu, Europe has just had their worst epidemic of that they've ever had in the bird population. It's not been our worst, but it's been close to our worst here in the United States. But concerning is that virus, instead of just being in poultry, we've all heard about, you know, chickens having to be culled because of the avian influenza, but we have now seen this get into wild birds, and we can't control them. And remember, a lot of birds migrate, And so if they have a virus, they will take the virus with them, if it doesn't kill them. And then increasing the concern, for the first time now, avian flu has been infecting mammals. And we have seen that spread. One thing that's got me quite concerned is that there was an outbreak of avian influenza in mink in Spain. Why would that worry me? If you look at animals that, and you wouldn't never guess this, but if you study this, you would see, if you look at animals that most resemble how the human airway works and how it might transmit viruses, minks are extremely similar. And they can pass this from each other. In the past, we've only had avian influenza infect people that typically work directly with birds, and then they haven't transmitted it. But as we get that infection into humans, it just like we've seen with this virus for COVID, it allows it a live laboratory to figure out how do I change so I get better at infecting. So this is worrisome. We've seen just since COVID, keep in mind what happened. We had a outbreak, some could call it a pandemic, but we had certainly a huge global outbreak of monkeypox. And, you know, many of us have been warning about that. Why? Because it's in Africa, it's in their wildlife, and it keeps emerging. And with travel, you have to worry about it. And now, of course, we've seen that. And so I do think we're coming at increased risk. Global climate change is affecting that. For example, you may recall when we saw Zika infections, particularly in the southern United States. We had never seen Zika before, but with the warming of the United States, it's made it a more hospitable environment for the vector. So those are the concerns. And I'm not trying to scare people. What my point of all this would be is that we can't just say, oh, whew, COVID's over, which, by the way, it's not. But a lot of people are saying that, and that we don't need to do anything. No, this is the time to plan. This is the time to figure out what did we learn? How would we do things differently? What if we had a virus with much higher mortality? Because in a way, we lucked out with the relatively lowish mortality rate with COVID. But I can name you a dozen viruses with pandemic potential that have mortality rates of 40, 50, 60%. So that would obviously be a whole different game. Again, I'm not trying to get people scared. I'm trying to say, let's wake up, let's plan. How would we deal with that? What steps do we need to take?
Well, and it goes back to hopefully we are more educated and more willing to say we need to plan better for a future pandemic. As always, Dr. Pate, it is so good to have you with us. Really appreciate your time and your expertise.
Thank you, Gemma.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Race might be a hot topic right now, but for so many of us, talking about race is nothing new. On the Code Switch podcast from NPR, we go beyond the headlines and we go deep. Listen now.